Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Deborah Becker. Rick Riordan is the author of the wildly popular Percy Jackson and the Olympians books, which sold millions of copies and sparked two Hollywood movies.
He wrote that series to inspire his son, who was a struggling reader. Since then, Riordan and his family moved to Boston, which is the setting for the first in his new series of books. This is how the story begins.
You wouldn't want to deal with my situation. Unless you've got some crazy desire to see undead warriors hacking one another to pieces, swords flying up giants' noses, and dark elves in snappy outfits, you shouldn't even think about finding the wolf-headed doors. My name is Magnus Chase. I'm 16 years old. This is the story of how my life went downhill after I got myself killed.
That's author Rick Riordan reading from his new book, Magnus Chase and the Gods of Asgard, The Sword of Summer. And Rick joins us in studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much.
So that's a lot in that little excerpt we heard right there. Dead, undead, dwarves, 16 years old. It's a complicated story. What was the inspiration?
You know, this is a story that I've had in mind as long as I've been writing children's books, actually. I had the idea for a boy who dies with a sword in his hand, like the Vikings of old, and finds himself in Valhalla, a Viking paradise. And I just sort of let that stew for a while. And finally, the time was right, and all the elements came together, and Magnus Chase was born, or died, as the case may be.
So tell us a little bit more about him. He's a homeless teenager who turns out to be the son of a Norse god. Percy Jackson, in that wildly popular series of yours that we mentioned at the beginning, was a boarding school student. So did you deliberately try to take two opposite ends here in your lead characters?
Actually, I hadn't thought about that, having their background be such a contrast. No. It was my way of kind of highlighting the problem of teen homelessness. As a teacher, I was a teacher in the classroom for 15 years and taught a number of homeless kids and was always amazed by how well they could keep it together in the classroom given all the challenges that they were dealing with outside the classroom. And I guess Magnus was my way of putting a face to that problem and of honoring those kids that I had taught in the past. It's a huge problem in the Boston area, as we know, as it is across the country. But I don't think many people think of teenagers when they think of the homeless.
Right. It's also, though, about a lot of mythology here, so and stories. So tell us why. What attracted you to Norse mythology?
When I was 13 myself, I had a very savvy English teacher. She knew that I was a reluctant reader, but she also knew that I loved The Lord of the Rings. That was the first series of books that I read simply for fun. And she said, aha, Rick, if you like The Lord of the Rings, you should really check out Norse mythology. That's where Tolkien got all of his ideas. She got me interested in the Norse myths. She's also the teacher that turned me into a writer. She encouraged me to write my own stories. So the love of mythology, the love of reading, the love of writing, it all came about for me when I was in eighth grade. And I don't think it's any accident that I taught middle school myself when I went into teaching because of the effect that Mrs. Pabst had on me all those years ago.
Well, you know what will probably interest a lot of readers and what I found really fascinating is the real Boston connection that you mention throughout this book. You write about Longfellow's love of Norse mythology, which led to Viking ship carvings actually on the Longfellow Bridge. You know, many people probably have no idea that those things exist. Can you describe some of those artifacts that you found locally here and then you were able to incorporate in your story?
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. I didn't really know that I would be writing the Norse series set in Boston, but the outlining of the story and our move to Boston as a family came about at the same time. So I started exploring, and lo and behold, there are numerous references and allusions and, as you say, artifacts that have to do with Norse mythology. There's always been this sense, at least it was very strong in the 19th century, that perhaps the Vikings got this far. Perhaps this was the outer edge of their explorations. Eben Horsford was a historian at the time, and although most serious historians dismiss what he thought, he was really one of the leaders when it came to pushing this idea. And because of him, we have the statue of Leif Erikson on the Commonwealth Mall. And Longfellow was inspired by this and wrote lots of poems about the thunder god Thor and the Viking warriors. And that's why, as you said, the Longfellow Bridge has those longships carved into it. And you know, there's so many different things that when you look at it, you could tie in to the mythology. The Make Way for Duckling statue, you know, I walk by that all the time in the public garden. I looked at it and said, wow, nine ducks. There are nine worlds in Norse mythology. Coincidence? Well, not anymore.
So you connected them. I see, I see. So, you know, so many of our listeners were really excited to hear that you were going to be on the show today, and they started tweeting questions. Here's one I have from Saif Abdin. Quote, so far, out of all the mythologies, which one have you most enjoyed researching?
Oh, it's very hard to say. I mean, I enjoy all of them. Greek and Roman, of course, is I guess what I'm known most for. The Egyptian myths were probably the hardest because we really don't have as much in the way of primary documents for them. So that was the most challenging. But as I said, I've loved Norse mythology since I was a child. So I think that really is my favorite mythology and the one that I was the most excited to get involved in.
And really one that's difficult to write about, I think, for this age group, isn't it? It's really complicated. And you're talking about hoping to reach struggling readers. And there are a lot of obstacles there, I think. So what's the age group that you would say you're shooting for here?
Well, I do feel a strong affinity toward the middle grade reader.
Which is,
let's say, 9 to 14, roughly speaking. I understand, I think from my years of teaching them and from my own struggle as a reluctant reader as a child, I kind of understand their sense of humor, their quirkiness, what they're looking for in a story and what they're not looking for in a story. They want a reason to turn pages. They want humor. They want relevance. They want great characters. And I try to deliver that. And yes, it's true. Mythology can be a hard sell, but it can also be incredibly high interest if you present it the right way. The stories are just amazing. I mean, you've got magic and all these different races of monsters and humans and giants and the gods and all these superpowers. It's amazing.
But, you know, you have serious themes, too. You have death. You have what do you believe in terms of afterlife? You have an orphan in this story, you know. And may I say, and hopefully it's not just my interpretation, but I think Magnus has, you know, attitude. I mean, he's a petty thief, right? And he talks about how he breaks into houses and he's very irreverent. Is that a way that you a technique that you have to employ to try to hook your readers, or what's happening there?
No, with Magnus, it's true. He especially when you first meet him, he's a damaged character. He has been living on the streets of Boston alone for 2 years, and I think that can certainly change your sense of the world when you're living on the streets. It can definitely change your feelings about things like petty theft, especially if it's that or going hungry for the night. I'm not defending all his choices, but I think that it's an understandable attitude for a 16-year-old boy who has been in Magnus's position. And I do think he evolves over the course of the book. But I made the conscious choice, not so much because I thought the readers would be interested in that mostly, but because it just made sense to me that that is how Magnus would feel when he's coming into this book.
After fighting for survival for so long.
Yeah,
he
exactly.
had to have that edge, if you will. You know, the New York Times review of your book says, quote, "The mystery of myth remains unactualized in his work." What do you say to that, review from the New York Times?
I don't really know quite what the reviewer is asking there or what he's going for there. I don't know. I found that rather enigmatic.
Right. Well, I think saying, almost wondering, and maybe I'm, oversimplifying here, but I think what he may be saying is that it's an oversimplification of myth. And there must be some line that you have to walk here in trying to teach this to kids, these very complicated stories, and write a compelling story at the same time to keep them interested. Is it difficult to balance and still giving that information out to kids so they learn something?
it definitely has to be presented in a way that engages the reader. I wouldn't call it oversimplification. I would call it being aware of the audience and being, as the old Viking storytellers were themselves, skalds. I mean, they were always aware of their audience. Who are they talking to? How can they engage them? And the story changes all the time. This is the oral tradition we're talking about here. And details would change, and the context of the stories would change constantly. And I think I'm doing the same thing when I try to take these myths and make them relevant for today's kids. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a challenge, but I'm always conscious not to try to talk down to them. There's nothing that young readers hate more than that.
Right. But it must be so difficult. We know we're living in a time that's a very competitive time for books in particular, when there are all kinds of electronic means of competing for kids' attention. And many people lament that young people don't read anymore. So, and you're talking about ancient mythology on top of it. So what do you do? What do you think you do to try to, you're obviously succeeding at it. What do you do to get those young readers and keep them?
I don't think it's true that young people aren't reading anymore. Just come to one of the events that I've been lucky enough to do. Thousands of kids cheering and getting really excited about the different authors that they're reading. I have a great deal of hope for the kids of the future. I think they are reading. And they will read if we give them the right books, if we find books that actually engage them and that they love. I think a few things is, besides just giving them the right books, another thing is to model reading. Read at home. And if the parents do that, the kids are more likely to as well.
Okay. Author Rick Riordan's latest middle grade book is Magnus Chase and the Gods of Asgard, The Sword of Summer. Rick, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Deborah Becker. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.